You're listening to All Things Crime, brought to you by Abject Entertainment. Be sure to check out some of the other great true crime podcasts from this network, including The Murder in My Family, Missing Persons, Scene of the Crime, Three Men and a Mystery,
DNA ID,
Malice,
Riddle Me That,
and
Zodiac Speaking.
All of these podcasts are available for you to binge on right now, wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe where you're listening to this podcast so you don't miss an episode.
Warning: All Things Crime is a true crime production that may contain violent or disturbing material. Viewer or listener discretion is advised.
Well, there was one time I was in Virginia. And there was there's a speed trap set up, and the trooper gets out of his vehicle, and of course I pulled over right away, windows down, hands on the wheel. And I remember he got to the car, he just looked at me, and he goes, "Sir, can I get your license registration?" So I hand him everything. He says, "Sir, step out of the car." So now I'm thinking, oh boy, what's going to happen? I didn't know in certain spots in Virginia, this is actually standard practice. They just want you to get out the car so that it can take a good look at you. And I got out the car, and the look he gave me, he just goes, "Oh no!" Like he actually vocally said, "Oh no!" So I go, "Can I hand you one more piece of ID in my back pocket?" He says, "Sure." I give him my job ID, and he goes, "Oh, thank God." Turns out we had rented a vehicle. And the vehicle's license plate came back to a whole bunch of suspended summonses, which wasn't my fault, which wasn't, I don't know whose fault it was, but he goes, "Yeah, I thought I was going to have to put you in cuffs." And I was just thinking about what was going to happen. And I said, "No, we actually wound up becoming friends. I'm friends with him to this day. We call each other and joke around." But he was so visibly relieved that I wasn't going to fight him and that I was actually on his side.
Zeke, welcome to All Things Crime.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I definitely appreciate the opportunity.
The pleasure is all mine. And for my listening and viewing audience, I want to introduce Zeke. He is he's a police officer and he's also a podcaster. And I see him, he's really active on different social media platforms. So if you ever get the chance to look him up, definitely do and give him a follow. And his podcast is awesome. So especially if you guys want to know really what policing is like in today's environment, then you got to listen to Zeke. And he puts CWA on there? A cop with attitude?
Cop with attitude, absolutely.
Yeah, I love it, man. And that's one of the things that actually attracted my attention to you. And first, I think Twitter is where I first saw you, some of your comments and things. And I was like, man, this is a guy after my own heart. So I got to figure out who this is and see if I can get him on my show.
No, thank you. Thank you. I mean, it makes me glad that a lot of cops are listening in and reading my tweets and listening to the podcast, and they're agreeing with, a lot of what I have to say. It's a great feeling when, I'm walking down the street and a cop will see me. He'll, "Zeke, I follow you." A lot of times it scares me, but because he jumps out of nowhere, but it's a good feeling. It lets me know I'm going in the right direction.
Well, I think there's a lot of people that are kind of closet types that, they really agree with a lot of the things that you say, but I think this is by design. Many of them are actually afraid to voice an opinion like the way you do, especially when you grab a microphone or a megaphone, basically is what you're doing, and just blasting it out there, because it's weird what is going on. And like I mentioned earlier, this isn't a political show, but it's a show about policing, and it's a show about the whole crime process. Now, in my travels, and I've traveled all over the world, and so I especially enjoyed listening to some of your other guests on your podcast. They talk about world travels and how lots of people really have no idea what they're talking about because they've never been there. They've never actually experienced what they're voicing their opinion on, which drives me crazy. In the process of doing that, it was really enlightening to me because I was like, of all the people that need to be talking about how to do better policing and how to do better law enforcement, it should be law enforcement. And I think you actually mentioned in one of your podcasts that you were saying, of all the panels and things that you're talking about reforming police and everything, there's no cops on there. There's nobody that actually has any street experience who's talking about the reforms that need to happen. And so I wanted to get you on today to, you know, get your opinion on that. So, you know, as opposed to the political side, you know, if we were to make some good changes, and well, first of all, before we even talk about changes, let's talk about what you think the problem is. So as you're out there in the streets and you are actually, you know, doing your job, what is it you're running into? So what's it like out there?
Honestly, if we're going to talk about fixing anything in policing, I mean, the problem has to be addressed. The hard questions need to be asked to a lot of people in the community. You know, why aren't you taking more of a responsibility for what happens in your neighborhoods, in your communities? Yesterday, there was a 7-year-old girl shot in Chicago that I mentioned on Twitter. Why aren't there protests looking for answers for this 7-year-old girl getting shot? You know, she didn't do anything wrong to anyone. She was waiting in line for McDonald's and McDonald's drive-thru. Why aren't there protests? Why isn't the mayor, who cried for a 13-year-old gang member, why isn't the mayor crying for this girl? You know, why aren't there community leaders working with the police to try to bring whoever shot this little girl into custody? Why I just have all these questions. Why? You know, they always talk about police reform. Let's change policing. Let's get policing out there with less weapons. Let's, you know, work on de-escalation. Well, when is the community going to get their training? You know, when are parents going to get their training to be more active in their children's lives? When are teachers going to get training in order to stop their indoctrination? You know, it's not a teacher's job to train a kid on how they feel, how a teacher feels. You know, I don't think there's anything really wrong or broken about policing. You know, I think a few things need to get cleaned up here and there, but, you know, little tiny minuscule things. I think the main change needs to happen in the community with the parents, with the teachers, with these neighborhood activists. If you want to see real change, that's where it starts.
There is so much absolute truth in what you just said. And it's so bizarre to me. I mean, it's hard to even put it into words, honestly. The shift that is happening away from personal responsibility. It's like nobody's responsible for anything. It's always somebody else's fault now. And the weird thing about communities as a whole, and you can go back all the way to the Wild West days, you know, as a whole, take the movie Tombstone. I'm assuming you've seen Tombstone before.
Who hasn't? I
mean, yeah, right. What a classic that movie is. So yeah,
exactly.
And there's different, you know, like Wyatt Earp, but it's all the same thing. So if you look at these Wild West type shows, and it shows the community as a whole is struggling, but they're all helping each other. They're all kind of, you know, everybody goes to the general store and buys some there. And then the general store guy helps the ranchers. But there's always like one or two central figures that their job is to enforce the laws, the rules that the community establishes. But there's only for a town of 100 people or 200 people, there's like one guy. And if that one guy, the sheriff, doesn't have the support of the community, there's no way he would be able to actually enforce what the rules are that they established. And to me, today, when you look at today's environment and you look at guys like you that are out there trying to enforce the rules and the laws that the community established, they told you what they wanted enforced. And then they said, okay, now go out and enforce it. But then when you do go out and enforce it, they come down on you. They come down like a hammer and they're like, you got to stop doing that. And it's like, well, make up your mind. Do you want laws enforced or not? And if you don't, then okay, we'll go find something else to do and you're on your own. But they don't want that. They just want you to become whatever it is they have in their mind that they should have. And I'm like, it just doesn't make sense to me. But no. So what is, you know, in that kind of a context, do you agree with that? Or what do you think?
Well, I mean, they have this picture, like you said, of what they want us to be. And it's the complete opposite of what actually happens in the real world. Cops would love voluntary compliance 100% of the time. If that could actually happen, that's a great day, a great situation for a cop. The truth is people fight back. You know, a lot of times they don't want to go back to jail. A lot of times they don't, you know, they want to resist just because they think it's the thing to do, whether it's for street cred or whatever. So policing then gets ugly, as I say. You know, there's no pretty way to take someone into custody who's trying to fight you. It gets ugly. It gets real. It gets physical. The problem is now it's on TV and everybody wants to cry, oh, police brutality, police brutality. You know, first of all, the problem could be stopped from them not resisting. And then second of all, you know, we need a little bit more understanding. You know, we're doing our jobs. We're actually not trying to hurt this person. We're trying to get them under control. Now, are there cops that take it a little bit too far? Sure. You know, we've all seen video of cops where we kind of look at that and go, you know, he probably shouldn't have done that. But for the overwhelming majority, the cops are out there doing the right thing. They're doing the job to the best of their ability. And at the end of the day, they just want to go home. There's no hidden agenda. There's no, you know, prejudice. There's no animosity. You do your job, you go home. But the elected officials, the easiest solution for them is just to blame the cops. It's an invincible position. They get to blame the cops. They get to say, oh, we're going to do better. We're going to introduce this kind of training. We're going to do de-escalation, which people seem to think that you can abuse the cops as much as you want without them getting mad or yelling back. And the community gets off scot-free. You know, like you said, it's always someone else's fault. But like that's why I said, if you want to address the real problems in the community, if you want real change, if you want real progress, you have to start there. It's not an easy answer. But for any politician that truly wants to affect change, that's where they have to start.
My thought is all of these politicians that are out there bashing on the cops, to me, I'm like, wait a minute. You guys are the ones that set these rules. So the people elected you to go out and make laws. And once you make the laws, we hire people to go out and enforce the laws. And then when they get enforced, you don't like them. I'm like, right. Well, you are the politician. So if you don't like what these guys are doing out there, then change the laws. Yeah. And, you know, and then face the consequences of the community saying, you know, what do you mean? It's not against the rules to rob people anymore. You're an idiot. I'm going to vote you out of there. You know, but none of the politicians want to do that. They just want to make, you know, you guys the bad guys. And again, to me, it's this weird cycle that we're in. And I'm trying to wrap my head around it. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. And do you know Dion Joseph? He's out in LA.
No, doesn't ring a bell.
Okay, you need to look him up. He was also a guest on this podcast and video cast, and fantastic guy. He's a cop out there and works Skid Row. And so there's a lot of homeless out there. And some of the things that he does, especially on LinkedIn, some of his videos are just spot on fantastic. And so I think you two would really be a force together, talking from both coasts and being able to almost join your message. I think he's kind of the same mindset that you are, in that, look, making the police and making law enforcement the scapegoat and the enemy is not going to end well for anybody, even the people that are actually doing it. I don't think they understand the long game here, because ultimately, if you get rid of law enforcement or you weaken law enforcement, it's the same with the military. I have a military background. So as they weaken the military, you know, what is your goal might be to fix law enforcement or the military, but ultimately, what is the repercussion of that? And the more you handcuff the cops, the worse society is going to get. To me, I just don't understand how people cannot see that.
Well, I mean, it's an easy, like I said, it's an easy fix for them. Their main goal is to get reelected. So they're not going to do anything to mess with that. They're not going to give hard answers towards the community that might work in the long run, but for the short term, they don't get reelected, or they jeopardize their chances of being reelected. Or, you know, for them to get reelected, they have to give the easy, soft answer, which is to demonize cops, to weaken the military, to go after the people that to sort of pick and choose where they want to go. Yeah, I mean, just like I said, you know, they create these laws. Like you said, they create these laws. The people don't understand what you know, if you want the laws changed, you have to affect the lawmakers. The people making the most noise right now are the ones affecting change. You know, you're talking about Black Lives Matter. You're talking about Antifa. They're making the most noise. So according to these politicians, they think this is what the people want. This is why I tell people you have to be more vocal and more open about your support for cops. Once these elected politicians see that there's a swell of support for cops, they're going to change their tune. You know, even the most liberal of them are going to change their tune. I mean, just look at what happened in January 6th. You know, it was easy for them to support cops and condemn Trump at the same time. Like you said, not to make this political, but that's just what happened. They were supporting cops. You know, oh, we love our police. You know, let's support them. Let's back them up against these evil Trump supporters that attacked them at the Capitol. And then 2 days ago, you've got Maxine Waters calling for an uprising against law enforcement and everything else like that. So, I mean, it's you know, they go by whichever direction the wind pushes them. The wind has to be pushed in the direction where they're supporting law enforcement. That's how change comes about.
Here in Alabama, a man named Robin Rocky Myers sits on death row, where he's been since 1993 after being convicted of capital murder. His appeals have run out, and he's awaiting an execution date. There's just one major problem. Rocky might be innocent.
Road to Redemption is the new multi-part miniseries on Corpus Delicti. We will take you through his story. The lack of evidence, witness tampering, likely jury bias, overridden sentence, being abandoned by his attorney, and a highly debated intellectual disability. You'll hear from his lawyer, investigator, and others involved in Rocky's fight.
And that's where you come in. We need your help. Rocky's last hope? The governor of Alabama. Join us, Jen and Lindsay, the hosts of Corpus Delicti, as we aim to bring this case to her attention.
Find Corpus Delicti on your favorite podcast app by searching CORPUSDELICTI. Episodes release weekly, so join us on Tuesdays starting March 9th to hear Rocky's story. See you soon.
Yeah, I was in Minneapolis 3 weeks ago, I think. I was up there training Hennepin County on a new MVAC, and it was crazy. Downtown, a lot of the businesses were all boarded up. Every public building had plywood everywhere, double fencing, you know, multiple layers of fencing. It's like they knew what's coming. And the sad thing is, it's not really going to matter what the outcome of the trial is. They expect everything to burn. And then, yeah, you have politicians that are going up there, and it's insane to me. They should be up there saying, hey, we need to allow the justice system to play out. This is our justice system. We have to support it. We need to, these citizens, these fellow citizens that are sitting on this jury, imagine the pressure these guys are under.
Oh yeah.
You know, these 15 individuals who are just everyday people like you and I that are sitting there on this jury, they've been selected to be people that are going to literally mean imprisonment or freedom for this, you know, Chauvin, but they know what's going on. And now they're going to hear all this chanting and screaming and yelling and protesting outside. They're going to see buildings burn. I don't care how much you try to sequester these people. There's no way they're not going to know what's going on out there. And especially the day that they have to get moved somewhere, you know, pack your bag because this hotel's about to get burned down. You know, something like that happens. They know what's going on. And so the influence of them beginning, you know, in the back of their minds, they've got to be going like, well, if we vote the wrong way, what's going to happen to my family? Somebody is going to put it out there of who I am. You know, is my house going to get burned down? And it's like you guys, like I have good friends that live in my neighborhood who are cops, and most of them on social media have a different name. you know, they, when they were helping enforce the, there was a riot in Salt Lake City the night after the initial George Floyd incident, and the Salt Lake PD, they shut that thing down the second night, but there were a lot of cops that got doxxed from that.
Right.
How much more un-American can you get?
Well, I mean, you know, these cops have families. They have, you know, wives, children that didn't ask for any of this. You know, these cops are doing their jobs, and basically their families are being attacked now. It's not just un-American, it's terrorism. I mean, you're threatening someone's family. These people should all be jailed. You know, God forbid they find your house now and they break in. You know, you've got a family at home that didn't ask for any of this. You know, they've got enough pressure. You know, my wife, my daughter have enough pressure with me going out there every day. I can't 100% guarantee them I'm going to get back. And now the added pressure of a bunch of terrorists, anarchist groups outside that now want to threaten us. I mean, at what point, again, with these elected officials, at what point do you protect cops and go, you know what, if you go to their house, we're arresting everyone on scene? You know, you wouldn't go to someone's private house and threaten them. You know, you wouldn't go to any of these elected officials' houses and threaten them. You know, I think Lori Lightfoot had a police detail in front of her house. You know, other mayors had police details in front of their houses protecting them. You wouldn't go to a cop's house and protest him. I mean, excuse me, you can't go to a cop's house and protest him and nothing happens. You can't go to an elected official's house and protest them without repercussions. So how about we protect cops and we protect their property and we protect them doing their job, the job that they signed up for, the job that you're asking them to do? Like I said, I think they should all be arrested. You know, you go to a cop's house, you start protesting, you start threatening his family. How is this allowed? How is this okay? I don't understand it at all.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Your family deserves the exact same protections and the exact same rights of privacy and everything else that anybody else's family does. And when kids and families, you know, there used to be kind of an unspoken ethic that like even a politician's family was off limits. And I think, I'm not sure exactly where it started, but to this day, anytime anybody starts, you know, bashing a politician's family, well, it depends on what side they're on, of course, but the media goes crazy.
Yeah.
And frankly, they should do that exact same thing if anybody is protesting a cop's family or something like that. It's like you're outside of you being a police officer, you are a private citizen, and you and your family deserve the same privacy that my family does or that anybody else's family does. And it's when that doesn't happen, when people started, like when my friend's address and family and all that information got put out there and basically they got doxxed, I was pissed. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, hey, brother, I'll tell you what, I'll break open my safe and I'll go stand guard at your house. You know, you just tell me, you give me the word and I will stand there, and trust me, nobody will touch your family.
Well, you know, that's also the thing too. Most cops I know are very Second Amendment friendly. So you break into their house, I don't think it's going to wind up too well for you.
It's going to be a bad day.
Oh, yeah. You better have all your affairs taken care of before you break into a cop's house.
Yeah, the best, what is that doormat that I've ever seen? It says, before you break into this house, make sure you're good with God because you're about to meet him.
I just bought that.
Oh, did you really? Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I love that. I need to get one. So, yeah, I'm one of those where I'm like, look, I don't care what you do. As a job, you have the responsibility to your employer to do the best job that you can possibly do. And all of you guys in law enforcement have signed up to do this job. And the job includes enforcing the laws that the politicians establish. And that, you know, it's not like you guys are making it up as you go along. You have certain obligations as police officers to do what you were hired to do and what you're trained to do. And that includes enforcing the law. And when people break the law, like this 13-year-old in Chicago, it's like, if you objectively look at that scenario, there is no way that you can actually say that that cop did anything other than what he was supposed to do?
Well, again, this is where you get to people that have never been cops or have no sort of law enforcement experience now offering their quote unquote expert opinion on what the cops should or shouldn't have done. What these people don't understand is as cops, we have a fraction of a second to make a decision. Was this kid firing a gun? Yes. Was he a gang member? Oh yeah. You know, my experience in gang, I can look at his pictures and I saw all the gang symbols there, all the gang terminology and codes. His nickname was Little Homicide, which that's not a name you just pick for yourself. That's a name that's given to you by other gang members. He had just finished firing 8 shots at a moving vehicle. You know, this is why the cop was there. The cop didn't just decide to pick a random person and run after them. The cop was responding to a call. And then this kid knew why the cop was coming after him. He threw the gun behind the fence. And then, you know, the cop made a decision. I'm not going to condemn or Monday morning quarterback a cop based on a video I've seen. Well, I can slow it down and analyze it and take a look and then rewind it and look at it again to see what should or shouldn't have happened. In real time, in that situation, the cop had to make a quick decision. People don't understand, you know, we have families as well. We want to go home at the end of our tour. We don't want to be the cop where, you know, we're on a t-shirt now, or, you know, we have cops flying in for our funeral. I don't want that to ever happen. My wife doesn't want it to ever happen. I've been to too many cop funerals. I don't want to see it happen to any other cop. But this kid made a decision as well. And he made some grown man decisions that day. You know, it's a grown man decision to carry a gun. It's a grown man decision to fire it. So he paid a grown man consequence. You know, everybody's saying, oh, he was 13. Guess what? In that space, he was just as grown as a 21-year-old or a 23-year-old. He made decisions that day. You know, and then you got Lori Lightfoot crying on TV. She's not crying for the 7-year-old that was just shot. She's crying for this guy. Like I said, again, it's the most expedient, quick answer, the quick points that she can score. Not the real points that she wants to score, where she can ask, why was he out at 3 o'clock in the morning? Why was he carrying a gun? Why was his name Little Homicide? But again, you know, that's pandering for votes, not doing the right thing that's going to actually build your community up in the future.
Which is sad. And yes, it is tragic that a 13-year-old lost his life. But like you said, every choice has a consequence, or at least it should. And that's again, it goes way back to what we first started with, is that individual responsibility. You know, at what junction do we take the blame off of the cop who was just, like you said, reacting? And I love all these people that are Monday morning quarterbacks are the best, because I listen to some of these people on TV and, you know, Twitter warriors and all of these types. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Let's put you in one of those training scenarios and see how you do, because every single one of those that I've ever seen where they'll take, and it doesn't matter if it's a pastor or a politician or a Hollywood actor, it doesn't matter. You put them in an actual scenario, one of those training scenarios that you guys go through all the time, whether it be virtual or, you know, a mock scenario, any of them, they fail miserably.
Oh yeah.
And the cops out there, when you guys are out there and you're in the heat of this situation, you don't have the luxury of freeze frame. You don't have the luxury of saying, does this kid have a gun? Literally 1 second ago, I saw a gun in that kid's hand. And now his hands are moving, and they're moving in a direction that, yeah, maybe he's just moving to put his hands in the air. But that's the exact same movement that is required to actually point a weapon at me and fire it. And that, you know, that officer unfortunately had to make a decision. And in that split second, you know, for us to come back and Monday morning quarterback this guy because we have the luxury of freeze frame, to me, that is just so unacceptable.
Well, yeah, I mean, these people that do the simulations, not only do they fail it, they all come away saying, you know what, I have a newfound respect for what law enforcement goes through. That's why some of these activists, these, you know, wannabe activists, they will not do the simulation. Listen, they understand what's going to happen. They understand the truth of what's going to happen, but it's going to screw up their entire narrative. You know,
right. Isn't that funny?
They're not going to be able to say what they have to say with the same conviction. Yeah, you know, you've got these people on Twitter, you know, some kid living in his mom's basement. You know, he's 35 year old and has never ventured outside of his basement, but he's played hours of Call of Duty. So he thinks he's got just as much say as an actual cop out in the street on what should and shouldn't have happened. Why didn't he just shoot the gun out of his hand? Why didn't he just shoot him in the leg? You know, I saw someone say, why didn't he just tackle him? Excuse me, I'm not going to tackle someone that's got a gun. You know, I don't feel like being shot at close range. Just because you can have you in your basement can have a feel good moment of, oh, well, you know, look at it. Look at the cop de-escalated that happened. No, that's not de-escalating. That's being dumb and dying. You know, that's why my response is always, you know, if you don't have any actual police work doing this, if you've never strapped on a gun belt, if you've never strapped on a vest, if you don't know this is standard foot post and, you know, people walk past you and they feel good because you're standing there and they know they feel safe. They're safe at least for that. Those couple of yards while you're there, then I really don't want to hear your opinion on what should and shouldn't have happened. You know, it's like me going to my doctor before surgery and saying, yeah, hey, make sure, you know, when you do, before you grab that scalpel, make sure you do this and make this kind of incision. You know, I watched a bunch of medical shows on TV and this is exactly how they did it. No, I would sound dumb. Most people will agree. You sound dumb telling a doctor how to do his job. Same thing with law enforcement. Just because you've played a video game or just because you've watched a TV show that's real life, it doesn't mean you know exactly what's going on or how cops think or how cops operate or what's going on in that heat of the moment. That's why I really don't pay them any mind.
Well, that's good, because, and I'm glad you don't, and I hope most cops don't, because honestly, the vast majority out here, and it makes me a little perturbed that it's the silent majority, because it needs to be the vocal of majority.
Absolutely.
And until we become the vocal majority, these politicians are going to continue to make things worse, and activists and everybody else. But I'll bet if you look at it, it's less than 1% of the society that is actually making 99% of the noise. And until all of us that are just out here trying to live our daily lives actually get involved and say, whoa, this isn't right, we have got to fix this, which is, again, another reason why I'm doing this podcast, because I'm trying to give you guys a voice. And I know you're doing it with the same thing with your podcast. And the more podcasts that are out there that are saying the same thing, maybe we all say it in different ways, and that's fine. To me, there can't be enough voices out there saying, we have got to stop this madness. You know, protesting is fine, but the moment you pick up a brick, the moment you threaten somebody, it is no longer a protest. You are now a rioter, and you are now a lawbreaker, and you need to be held account.
Well, yeah, that's why there was a collective eye roll when a certain former first lady said that the protests were mostly peaceful. You know, every cop was like, excuse me. You know, every cop, you know, I was out there. It wasn't mostly peaceful. You know, when they were throwing lots of cocktails out of vans, you know, when they were burning down stores and they were looting the Nike store and the Foot Locker and the Apple stores, you know, that wasn't mostly peaceful. You know, there was a small block during the day when they were peacefully protesting, and those people were all fine. You know, they peacefully protested and they went home. It was what happened that night that really defined what was going on. You know, nobody boards their stores up over mostly peaceful protests. You know, you don't impose a time limit on when people can go out over a mostly peaceful protest. I mean, you know, like I said, you know, it's a matter of being honest with people. Mostly peaceful, not an honest phrase when you're describing these bona fide riots that went on. So, you know, just you have to introduce honesty into all of this, or else nothing gets fixed. And you're right. The people in these high crime neighborhoods would give us a small nod when they saw us, or a quick thumbs up. You know, they didn't really want to be seen giving the cops a thumbs up, but they would give us a small nod, a small thumbs up. Those are the people that we need to be more vocal. You know, I would say 95%. Over 95% of people that live in these high crime neighborhoods, they want us out there, you know, enforcing the laws and keeping people safe and doing our jobs. You know, you never hear over-policing from them. You always hear over-policing from these activists that don't live in these neighborhoods, from these elected officials that don't live anywhere near these neighborhoods. But the people actually that live in these neighborhoods, I would say they need to get more vocal. They need to have more of a voice, more of a say, because they want us out there. because when you defund the police, when you put handcuffs, so to speak, on the police, when you restrict what police do, they're affected and they know it and they feel it.
Yeah, the Mayor de Blasio is never going to be without security.
Yeah.
No matter what rules that he puts down on the rest of New York, none of those rules are going to ever affect him. And to me, that's the number one problem with most of these activists and politicians, is when they put out what they put out, a huge amount of the time, it doesn't actually affect them. To me, it drives me crazy when, and I had this in college too. Have you ever had a college professor that is teaching on a certain subject, but has never actually done what it is that he or she is teaching? And for example, in college, when I first, I went into, I thought I wanted to go into international business. Okay. And ironically, I ended up in international business, even though I bailed on that initially. So how many of us are actually doing what we thought we would be doing when we were 25, right?
Listen, but, I knew I wanted to go into some sort of protection, but I didn't know what I was going to do. But no, if you had told me at 25 I was going to become a cop, I probably wouldn't have believed you.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you're a perfect example of that. But fortunately for you right now, I mean, you have the... You have the body type, man. What did you say on one of your podcasts? You're 6'2", like 260, something like that?
About, yeah. I played football for a season for my job, so yeah.
There you go. Well, geez, man. Well, I'll tell you, most of the guys that are 6'2", 260, and if you're in as good a shape as I think you are, then yeah, this is a good profession for you, man. You can handle it, because I'll tell you what, I was also laughing at one of your podcasts when you're like, yeah, when you get pulled over by the cops, you can just see on their face there. And, you know, if they ask you to step out of the vehicle and you step out and they're just like, oh, you know what? I hope this doesn't go sideways, man, because if it does, it's going to really hurt.
Well, there was one time I was in Virginia and there's a speed trap set up, and the trooper gets out of his vehicle. And, you know, of course, I pulled over right away, windows down, hands on the wheel. And then he got to the car. He just looked at me and he goes, sir, can I get your license registration? So I hand him everything. He says, sir, step out of the car. So now I'm thinking, oh boy, what's going to happen? I didn't know in certain spots in Virginia, this is actually standard practice. They just want you to get out the car so that it can take a good look at you. And I got out the car, and the look he gave me, he just goes, oh no. Like, he actually vocally said, oh no. So I go, can I hand you one more piece of ID in my back pocket? He says, sure. I give him my job ID, and he goes, oh, thank God. Turns out we had rented a vehicle. And the vehicle's license plate came back to a whole bunch of suspended summonses, which wasn't my fault, which wasn't, you know, I don't know whose fault it was. But he goes, yeah, I thought I was going to have to put you in cuffs. And I was just thinking about what was going to happen. I said, no, you know, we actually wound up becoming friends. I'm friends with him to this day. We call each other and joke around. But he was so visibly relieved that I wasn't going to fight him and that I was actually on his side. So.
Oh, yeah.
I get that.
The most hand-to-hand that I ever did was I went to Ranger school with the Army. There's a certain section of Ranger school where it's more about just beating the crap out of each other than it is actually teaching, you know, how to do actual hand-to-hand. Uh-huh. And there is a period in there that once you figured out what was going on for the training, you're just like, okay, I got to find somebody that is like smaller and weaker than me, because I'm going to get the crap kicked out of me. And if there's some dude that looks like you, that's going to be a bad day. And so I can kind of relate with that, but you know, there's just enough of scenarios that you just know, you know, anybody that's played sports and you're coming around the end and you see some dude that's like twice as big as you, and he's got a full head of steam and he just plows into you. You're just like, yeah, that hurt. Okay. I'm not sure that I want to do this anymore. And, you know, but every cop goes through that scenario. And that's another one of the things that I'm like, these politicians say, well, you know, not every officer needs to have a service weapon on them when they pull somebody over. And when I can't imagine what your reaction was, but when I heard that, I was just like, are you out of your mind? These guys have absolutely no idea what they're walking up on. And, you know, they don't know if this guy is going to be peaceful like you were. If the officer is 5'10 and 180 and some guy 6'2", 260 gets out of the car, what are they going to do?
Well, I mean, in my situation, it's always helped a lot. My size has actually always helped a lot because I get voluntary compliance more often than not. I mean, yeah, sometimes it's you know, it's always the little guys too that always want to fight me, you know. But I do get voluntary compliance more often than not. You know, as far as the whole don't take guns to a traffic stop mentality that's going on. These people, again, this is the same shoot them in the leg crowd. This is the same, you know, tackle the gun wielding bad guy crowd. You know, you have no idea what it is to pull a car over. I even said, you know, you can search YouTube and there's hundreds of videos of cops being ambushed on car stops. You know, aside from domestics, it's the most dangerous thing we do. And these people don't understand that. They think that everything can get solved with just a quick, you know, tap on the shoulder or a quick, you know, hey, sir, do this for us. And that's not the case. You know, they don't live in the same reality that we do when we have to pull these cars over. Car stops are dangerous. Again, you know, like I said, my Virginia story, this guy had no idea who he was pulling over. He was pulling over a cop and didn't know it. Could I have been a gangbanger? Sure. Could I have been some guy that just got out of jail that's not going back? Sure. He didn't know that. For these people that are saying, you know, they don't need guns on car stops. So I think Minnesota just said that they're going to have a traffic safety officer that's going to do these car stops from now on. This is going to go bad. And it's going to go very bad, very quickly.
I don't know who would sign up for that.
I certainly wouldn't. Even at my size, I'm not pulling over a car with that. I don't know who's in there without a weapon. You know, I need to be protected as well. So, I mean, these people are just clueless. That's what it comes down to. They're clueless.
Honestly, I think every elected official, before they open their mouths, should go on a ride along.
Well, they're not going to do that. They're not going to do, you know, again, it's the same reason why they're not going to do the simulations rounds. They're not going to do the virtual police tactics course. It's going to destroy their narrative. Without, you know, they're not going to be able to say, do a unarmed car stop with a straight face. They're just not. You know, after taking a police tactics course, I'm not going to do that. After doing a ride along where they see what happens, where they encounter a public that might be combative, God forbid they go on a job that goes completely sideways. It's going to change their entire narrative. I mean, it should happen. There should be at least a class where, you know, some of these elected officials that have these outlandish ideas of what policing should and shouldn't be, should they take some sort of class? Sure, but they're not going to. And again, you know, I read Thomas Sowell a lot. And
that dude is amazing.
Oh, he's great. He's great. I discovered him, I would say, about 5 years ago. And I've been reading everything I can to, you know, everything I can get my hands on, which is a shame, by the way, that I only discovered him 5 years ago. He's been doing his thing since long before then.
All right.
But he said that he doesn't waste his time talking to these activists, these reverends that make a career out of, you know, race hustling and race baiting. He doesn't waste his time. He's basically asking them to give up their main source of income. And that's the same thing with these elected officials. That's the same thing with these activists. You know, they're not going to give up what makes them easy money. And while we're talking about easy money, I'd like to congratulate the co-founder of BLM on her fourth mansion, you know, that she moved into a white neighborhood, you know, because white supremacy is so horrible and so bad that she had to move into a white neighborhood. You know, it's that kind of thing. You know, she's not going to give up buying mansions, you know, so
yeah,
why talk her out of it? Why convince her otherwise?
She's got hers. That's what matters.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I don't have a mansion, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, no, this... This nice wood paneling behind me is hiding. It's amazing what the virtual world can create. You know, we can make whatever reality we want. But well, Zeke, I appreciate you coming on. I mean, there's so many more things that we need to talk about. We're definitely going to have you on again because there are so many issues right now with law enforcement that, and again, I try really hard not to make anything, you know, especially this show, political, but It seems that law enforcement and politics and the media and everything are so intertwined right now that you really can't talk about one without talking about the other one. But honestly, just like you, I just completely ignore all of these people that don't actually have a basis to stand on. I'm like, look, if you haven't actually been in a uniform or at least walked alongside a guy who's in uniform, who's actually trying to enforce the laws that you're talking about, then stop talking about them. Because you, it's like ignorance to me is like the worst offense. It's like, don't talk to me if you absolutely have no basis for what you're talking about. And that's why I created this show. I wanted to talk to guys like you so that my audience can actually learn what it's really like out there.
I think social media has given voice to the ignorant. You know, people that have all these opinions on what should and shouldn't happen without actually having experienced it. And policing and law enforcement, that's like the main thing now that people can voice their opinion on without having an actual education. Like I said, it's ignorance. It's I know what to do to fix this. And then when you present them with facts and logic on why that wouldn't work, now they fall back to calling you names, or they fall back to, you know, other ignorant people agreeing with them, you know, and they surround themselves with that like an echo chamber. You know, I'm glad to do things like this where I can give law enforcement a voice, which was always my goal. Like I said, you know, 2 days ago, I just happened to be in the city walking, and a cop screamed, "Zeke," you know, and just came up to me and said how much he appreciated my words and how much he appreciated what I'm saying, and told me to keep doing what I'm doing. And that's a great feeling. It's just a great feeling. So, you know, thank you for the opportunity.
Well, I 100% agree with you, man. Keep doing what you're doing, because giving your side of the story and getting more of the actual truth, but also the positivity that you guys do. And in fact, I was talking to a crime scene investigator out of Atlanta, and we came up with a hashtag. So maybe on Twitter, you can do this. It's called hashtag PosiPol, PosiPol. And it's kind of a playoff of Interpol. It stands for positive police pictures. I got thinking that, you know, there's around 700,000 law enforcement officers out there just in the US. Imagine how much different things would be if every single cop took one picture. And even if it's not about them, you know, because I know cops hate, you know, doing selfies and stuff like that. But just take a picture and put that hashtag PosiPol on it, of something that you guys do. Because I know you have tons of buddies that are out there that they're buying shoes for the homeless. They are buying meals. They're helping people change tires. They're doing all this service, amazing things that happen all the time. And yet they rarely get credit for it. And one of the biggest problems is you guys have to stand up. And when I say you guys, I'm talking law enforcement in general. You know, it can't just be the Zeke show. It has to be more than just you guys, or just you, you know, speaking for the law enforcement community. Everybody has to contribute. But imagine if 700,000 pictures hit social media in some form or fashion with that hashtag on it every day, the difference that would make.
Well, I mean, I think the main problem, especially here in New York, that a lot of cops run into, is like you said earlier, they're afraid to voice their opinions. They're afraid to put their true feelings out there. Even me, you know, like it took a while for me to get comfortable expressing my views, just because you feel like you're doing something wrong just by having pro-police views. Sometimes, you know, you're going away from the narrative. So I think more cops need to be let know, you know, need to let more cops know that it's okay to have pro-police views. It's okay to have pro-America views, you know. You just need to break out of that whole mentality where you need to, you know, you feel the need to cover up how you feel because you don't want to get in trouble, so to speak, or you don't want anybody to think something of you. Go ahead, be loud with it. You know, my entire family knows how I feel. Thankfully, they support me. And I think if more cops came out and just said how they feel, it would lead to an effect, a domino effect. And that's also what I'm trying to encourage. You know, it's okay to voice how you feel.
Absolutely. Love it, man. Okay. Well, hey, let's pause everything like that. I know, especially as a military officer, I have an amazing opinion on that that lieutenant that got pulled over. But let's save that for another episode.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, hey, appreciate you coming on, and you have a good day, and be safe out there. And like how you always say, hey, you know, we got your six, man.
Thank you. I've got yours as well. Thank you so much.
Okay. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you for listening to All Things Crime. We are so grateful for all of our listeners. If you enjoyed this, please give us a positive review so other people can find it as well. Have an amazing All Things Crime day.
Finding the right person for the job isn't easy. Just ask someone who hired a lounge singer to be their office receptionist.
Hello, this is Mickey Marquis, and you've reached the office of Duggan Associates. Thank you very much. Catch me Tuesday nights at the Hotel Johnson. Hello?
But if you've got an insurance question, you can always count on your local GEICO agent. They can bundle your policies, which could save you hundreds.
Duggan Associates, this is Mickey Marquis. Hello?
For expert help with all your insurance needs, visit geico.com/local today.